Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every Genesis is a reminder to try something new, to keep growing, keep hustling, keep beginning. At Genesis, they harness that mindset into their performance SUV, the GV70. Turn heads with a stunning design inside and out. Discover intuitive technology inside the GV70 with a 14.5-inch infotainment system. The Genesis GV70 is for those who are making their mark on the world and want to enjoy luxurious amenities while they do it. So go on and enjoy an exhilarating drive in the GV70. Your Genesis GV70 is waiting for you. Learn more at genesis.com. Genesis, keep beginning. Welcome back to Currently with Curator, where I share my latest style obsessions, all of which you can purchase through my shopping community, Curator. My spring curation is here. Throughout the season, I'm going to be telling you more about everything inside of it, item by item. This week, we're focusing on the Rendor Victoria hoops. I believe you can never have enough hoops, and this pair has the look of two in one, as well as a cool twisted texture. And you can choose between yellow or white gold to make them suit your personal style. These hoops alone retail for $85, but you can get this entire five-product curation for just $100 when you start your membership with my code ZOE25, ZOE25. These boxes are in limited supply, so head to curator.com, that's CURATEUR.com, to claim this offer now. Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Zoe, and you're listening to Climbing in Heels. This show is all about celebrating the most extraordinary superwomen who will be sharing their incredible journeys to the top, all while staying glamorous. Today with me, I have entrepreneur, founder, and my friend, Nikeo Greco, who is behind some of the best skincare brands on the market. Nikeo is all about using clean and green beauty products, specifically cold-pressed oils to treat the skin, and trust me, they work. Look at her skin, I promise you. On today's episode, Nikeo talks about her career pivots, of which there are many, from being a CAA assistant to creating her own e-commerce business for BIPOC beauty products. She also talks about the hardships of building a brand and dealing with haters once you've achieved your goals and becoming successful. You didn't hear it from me, but this may be one of my very favorite episodes of this season. You are going to learn a lot. I'm so happy to have you on. We've had so many amazing women on this podcast, and I think you probably know pretty much all of them, if not 90%. And I think, you know, first off, I'd like to just say why I started Climbing in Heels is because, like you, we have the most incredible women that surround us. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Everyone does something different. Everyone's at the top of their game. And for me, you know, it's been so incredible to watch, like, everyone kind of forge their own path. Some people have gone to a lot of school. Some people have gone to barely any school. Some people have had 100 jobs. Some people started out of their garage. And so I think for me, I wanted to really get into, like, women's paths to the top because they are so different. And it's called Climbing in Heels because all the women that have been on here are women who really do embrace being a woman and what that means to them. And that I think the struggle has been for us coming up over the last, whatever it is, 20 years, call it, fighting for our space, but owning being a woman. And I think there's sort of like, and now it's, I think, becoming easier to be a woman that succeeds. Right. But as you know, it hasn't always been that way. So I think I always like to just start a little bit from the beginning, because I find, and this is like, you know, as a psych major, and I like to say that my career in styling has really served me as a psychologist last 20 years.
Well, yeah.
But,
amazing.
But I do like to start a little bit as like, who were you as a little girl? Like, were you this like fiery, ambitious, like girl, or were you painfully shy and like, you know, scared of your own shadow kind of kid, or like none of the above? So let's go back. First of all, where were you born and where did you grow up? Like where, how did you come to be in this world?
Oh my gosh. I love this setup. I love the pod. I'm so excited that you're doing this. And it is so much fun to listen and to watch, you know, the content around the pod and see, you know, hear everybody's trajectory. It's so important. It's our stories. So I am a first generation American of Kenyan descent. I was born in upstate New York. Okay. And then moved from upstate New York to New York City and New Jersey, where I lived until I was 8 in Wayne. I know we have that Jersey connection.
No one else does, by the way. No one else does.
Right. I think Allie Larder might be our only. Yeah, that's our Jersey girl connection. But when I was 8, I moved to Oklahoma. So my father started the African Studies program at the University of Oklahoma. So one day he came home into New Jersey and he was like, we're moving to Oklahoma. So that's where I was raised.
How did that affect you at 8? Cause I think about my son who's 8 and I try and figure out like,
right.
I mean, kids are very resilient and very adaptable. And I think, but you know, I have had women on this pod that are like, oh my God, I was moved around 100 times. I never had friends in one place. I had a single mom. So like, how was that? Were you freaked out? Were you excited? Was Oklahoma hard?
You know, I actually had a very happy childhood in Oklahoma, but when I got to Oklahoma from New Jersey, you know, I went to preschool, kindergarten, first grade, you know, moved in second grade. And I remember the first day of school, my teacher asking me, you know, do you have any questions? And I looked around the room and I didn't say, you know, where are the other black
sure,
people?
Of course.
I literally said, where are all the Puerto Rican, Italian, and Jewish people? Because I'd never been in such like a homogenous looking room in my entire life. I mean, we lived in Wayne, New Jersey, which is right around the block from New York City. So, you know, my early childhood days were taking all my dance classes. My mom took us into the city every weekend.
Same.
You know,
same.
So that was all I knew up until that point. But you know, surprisingly and luckily, I really thrived in Oklahoma. Who knew?
By the way, and that's so incredible because you would think the opposite, honestly, because this was a while ago. Not that you're old, because you're still very young,
this is the
but
80s. It was the 80s. And, you know, I will say that, you know, I grew up around the Oklahoma City area in Norman, Oklahoma, which is a college town, which definitely recruits people from all over. And I do find that when you grow up in a college town, it doesn't necessarily reflect the small towns around
right,
it.
Right.
So I think I was fortunate to be sort of in the metro Oklahoma City and Norman area. And then was there, you know, all the way through college.
You stayed and went to college there. So you really, that's so nice. You got to stay close to your family.
Yeah. They didn't want me to. My parents wanted me to go away. They were like, you've been here for quite some time. It's time to sow your oats. Let's go to Syracuse or somewhere on the East Coast. And I stayed. I was really happy there. And, you know, the transition of growing up in a town and then going to college in the same town is also quite a transition because I moved on campus.
Sure.
I joined a sorority house.
See, that's so nice. I think that's so nice because a lot of kids don't want to leave home. So they like go to school
and
nearby.
My parents were like, if you're not leaving the state, you're definitely leaving this house. I did get to go, you know, it was nice. I had a place to go do my laundry and drop in for, you know, family dinners and things
like
that.
So
but
nice.
it was lovely. And the transition between, you know, going to Norman High School and then going to OU was dramatically different because then all of a sudden there were all these people that came in from other places right. with different sort of upbringings, et cetera. So that was an interesting transition.
You grew up with working parents, both working. Yeah. Okay.
Both parents, academia, my mom and dad, both professors, deans, et cetera.
Hence you. This was the brain was going to be passed down one way or another. Okay. So that actually makes a lot of sense. So, but I also feel that, especially if you grow up in a happy family with a happy childhood, very often that work ethic and all of those things that you're surrounded by, I think it's just osmosis. Like, it's what you see, it's what you know, it's what you're like, oh no, I'm doing this, I'm working. This is not like, I'm not marrying some random person and like trying to live that way. Like, not that that's not okay. I'm not judging. Marry whoever you want. But I do think our work ethic, whether in an obvious way or a less obvious way, really does come from our upbringing. And
100%.
So at what point were you like, hey, all right, this is my dream, these are my goals? Like, what happened first? Because I know a little bit, of course, like from our conversations, and like, obviously I've read a million things that you've done and like whatever, but I like to hear it from you because sometimes things get, you know, turned around, but I want to hear your story.
Yeah. So I went to the University of Oklahoma. I studied business.
Smart.
As an undergrad.
That was very smart, by the way.
It was smart, but it was also like, and I'm so grateful for that degree, but I didn't know honestly what I wanted to be when I grew up until I was probably in my 30s.
Interesting.
It was, often when you're a first generation American, there's this expectation that you're going to be, you know, in academia, you're going to be an engineer, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer. And while those things were suggested to me, it was never what I wanted to do. And I actually wanted to be a newscaster. That's what I wanted to do and wanted to study. And my parents, you know, definitely talked me out of that.
You wanted to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and like do makeup at 3 and then go into other places.
I wanted to be Diane Sawyer or by the way. Connie Chung. Like, I had lofty goals. That's a local name,
I understand that, by the way. And by the way, Diane Sawyer is like the queen. I love her. And Connie Chung. I mean, the same. Everyone's like, who's your hero? I'm like, Oprah, duh. Like,
Oprah, duh. Diane Sawyer. Yeah.
Love Diane
same
Sawyer.
Same category of icons. Mm-hmm. Yes. So when my parents, you know, suggested that I don't study to be a newscaster, I decided that business was well-rounded. Wanted to be a lawyer for a little while, decided that wasn't my path. And so, you know, I was a business marketing major. And I guess in hindsight, I didn't ever plan to go have a marketing job per se. I just wanted to graduate and figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. But when I was in college, I worked a lot in sports. And so, you know, in Oklahoma, sports is it's a big deal. And so I worked for the men's basketball team. I worked for the men's baseball team at the university and did an internship with ESPN. And so I thought ultimately, you know, maybe I'll work in sports. Maybe I'll be a sports agent. And I ended up moving to LA when I was 23 because I didn't want all the jobs that I was being offered in pharmaceuticals and, you know, investment firms and all those things. I was like, that sounds really boring. Yeah. So I'm going to move to LA. And I'm going to be a sports agent. And then, you know, I got here and realized that that was not an easy path. And so I became an assistant at CAA. That was my first out of college
Interesting.
Job.
So entertainment, it's funny because like you grow up in Oklahoma, you come from these super academic parents, you go to this great school, you're a business major, which by the way, in hindsight, like I mean, being a psych major has definitely served me, but I would say if I had to rewind, I would say business can only help you in life, no matter what path you choose, right?
Exactly. And it's a great, well-rounded, although I really loved my psychology and sociology classes. I would just run around diagnosing people all day.
I diagnose people all day still. but I will say that like, it's funny because, you know, I think for so many people I meet, you know, coming from sort of like New York, LA, like New Jersey, like everyone's like, I want to be an agent CAA. I want to be an agent CAA. But like nobody understands really what that means. It's not cute in the beginning. Mm-mm. It's not glamorous. Mm-mm. It's not.
No.
But there are just endless success stories of the people that really stay and do that. Mm-hmm. But Okay. So you're like, okay, I'm this academic person. I want to be in entertainment. There was obviously, to me, there's a common thread here. You wanted, mm-hmm. there was something you were seeking, because me knowing you on a personal level, you mm-hmm. have a very loud, strong voice that needs to be heard. Right. And it's no. nice that you yeah. saw that early and you felt that. So there was something mm-hmm. pulling you to that. Right. And I think if I'm just playing I'm seeing mm-hmm. that, like, you're sort of like, okay, I want to use my brain, but I want to use mm-hmm. my voice. I have right. a lot to say. How do I start yeah. this? And it's very confusing right. because you're 22, you're 23, and you're like, dear God, I don't know yeah. what I want to do, but, like, what's my first step? So you end up at CAA.
Right.
And what happens? Mailroom or assistant?
Yeah, no, I luckily got straight on a
nice.
Desk.
Nice.
I worked in the reality TV department, which this is before reality TV was what we know it to be
wow.
today. This is like when Animals Attack, Cops, Taxi Cab Confessions was the runaway hit, right? Like this was not, it was the only department at the time where they accepted unsolicited material, you know,
yeah.
that's, you know,
yeah.
for people who don't speak agent, yeah. that's, you know, most agencies don't let you just drop off a
sure.
script, but that's called unsolicited material. But that was allowed because they were just looking for content. And so my part of my job was taking home VHS tapes uh-huh. at night and watching the most messed up ideas for TV shows. Like really a true lesson in humanity. So when I say reality TV, I'm people think one
dead.
Thing, but no, this was real. This was real.
That's
real.
Like what Charlie Corwin did, like original media, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Like they were doing a
yeah.
lot of this and they were doing so well. I mean, they're but it
yeah.
was hardcore.
That was our first foray into it. So I worked on a desk with actually a very lovely agent. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have, you know, I mean, yes, they were agents,
sure.
but she was kind.
Amazing.
And so, you know, as I was making friends, I was like, ooh, I'm the lucky one. I really lucked out on the desk. And so I worked with her for a while and then, you know, moved on. I didn't necessarily want to do the trainee program. I was pretty sure at that point I didn't want to be an
sure.
agent. And so I left and I went to a management company and worked there for a while.
Three Arts, right? Three Arts? Like
yeah,
Molly Madden?
Well, first I went to, yeah. So I went to Three Arts after. I actually went to a small management company that doesn't exist anymore called Elephant Walk. And then I went and I left and I actually worked with the late Jay Maloney
oh
for many
God.
Years. And
wow.
then after he passed away, then I went to Three Arts and I worked with Molly.
Wow.
And then that's when I realized, like, as much as I love the clients, I love the fashion and beauty aspect. I want to be in the makeup trailers. I want to get to know people like you. I want to know
yep.
the stylist.
Yep.
I want to, it wasn't about reading scripts and finding actors jobs
yep.
that I found my passion. And it was in that time that I would get so many products. Well, first of all, it was a really interesting time. It was an incredible time for indie beauty.
Yep.
This is like the days of Stila and Hard
yep.
Candy and all of those
Tarte.
Incredible brands.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
Coming to the forefront. And then also it was this really interesting time when you started to see actresses on covers as opposed to just models
yep.
or actresses sort of diversify their careers by getting, you know, Neutrogena campaigns.
Yep.
And so,
yep.
you know, this was the very early 2000s.
And, by the way, they
so
only
just,
wanted celebrities on the cover at that point.
Yeah.
There was that wave where it was like,
right.
there was no models on covers for like a long
right.
stretch of
right.
time. I remember
totally.
That because actors sold.
Yeah. yeah. I misprint. But you know, at that time it was exciting because I got to be a part of this sort of evolution
mm-hmm.
in fashion and beauty while still working at a talent management
yep.
company. And so, you know, I had a lot of products that came across my desk and a lot of really sweet actresses that were like, oh,
keep
you can
it.
Take that
right,
home.
Right,
and
right.
I was such a product fanatic. And you know, it was in that moment, I'd say that was my aha, like 27-year-old moment, that I realized that there were all these incredible beauty products coming across my desk. And because I had had this Kenyan heritage and learned my first beauty secrets from my Kenyan grandmother, Nikeo, when I was 8, I understood in that moment that the continent of Africa was so underrepresented, mm-hmm. especially in premium beauty. And
when the most beautiful skin exists there, by the way, let's
right,
talk about
right.
that. So what is that
right.
secret?
And the beauty rituals. Yeah. Like every product I would look at would use like Marula or Shea, but nobody talked about Africa at that time. And so I decided at the ripe old age of, you know, 27, 28, I'm going to quit my job and make my grandmother's coffee scrub.
Wow.
And that's how it happened. I wanted to celebrate the sophistication of Africa and teach everybody about all the incredible ingredients. I mean, it's just so fascinating sometimes when I look back to, you know, 23 years ago, me, and it's amazing the courage and resilience and just go get them attitude that you have at that age that you have to kind of see.
Yeah. It's right? kind of crazy. And I think, you know, one of the questions I get asked a lot, whether social media or just doing interviews, is like, I'm 35 or I'm 40 or 45. Is it too late to start a new path? And I'm like, there is no age on starting a new path.
No.
There just isn't.
No.
You know,
absolutely
I just think there isn't. And I think it takes a lot of trial and error sometimes to find your path. And I think, you know, it's very interesting because I think for you, you got to now combine all these different things that you've learned at all your different jobs. And I think it's important to always step back and be like, okay, if I didn't do that step, right? Like if I didn't do that step, I would have never figured out that I could have done this or that I didn't like doing that. And there's a lot of what ifs, I think, in our lives, right? And a lot of like, our path is always very like, it's very crooked. It's not really like this, right? It's not really straight and easy. And I feel like those left and right turns sometimes are what sometimes kicks our ass, takes us 100%. Down. But I think when you get up, you're like, okay, if that didn't almost kill me, I would have never had the courage to just be like, hey, you know what? I'm just doing this because this is what I really love. And now do you feel like, I mean, listen, you're probably working harder now than you've ever worked in your life because it's for you. You have a lot of people involved. You have all these different brands. You are representing. I want to talk about now what you're doing because I feel like you started your own brand, right? And then and then you launched 13 Loon. And I want to hear about, I know about it, but I want to share about it. And then I want to hear also, now you recently launched Relevant, which is getting bigger and bigger. So I want to talk about all that too, because, well, first off, the products are amazing. So I want to say that.
Thank you so
totally
much.
Totally like unbiased, unsolicited. She didn't ask me to say that. I'm here to say that they're really incredible.
Thank you so much.
And I think what you're doing is so important. But also beautiful and smart. But it's like I was at the lunch this summer and I left there just so like filled with emotion and filled with like excitement to like talk to the founders and like use the products. And like I went home with this massive bag of goodies and I was like slathering all these like oils all over me. And like, so, well, because we can never have enough oil, right? Like
never.
So tell me how that, because I feel like you started with a scrub. Then you like you had your brand, and then what happened?
So I started with my grandmother's coffee scrub. That was the very first product I ever made. And by the way, you were at my very first launch party in 2002. Like, talk about
so crazy.
A supportive sister.
So crazy.
You are a woman who really supports women. You've been doing it for now 21 years.
God, I love it.
So I started as an indie brand. I had barely any capital. I learned very quickly as a young female, a young Black female, how hard it would be to raise
all
money. And so I just didn't waste my time. I was like, forget it. I'm just going to go. And by the way, I always say to, you know, young people today, or even people who are starting new journeys in their 30s or 40s, don't get deterred by the stats. I had no idea that only, I mean, I can't even imagine in 2002, 2% of women get VC funding or 0.0006% of people of color 100%. Get funding. I had no idea what the stats were. I just knew like I needed a job. I'd quit my job. I wanted to make this coffee scrub thing work and I needed to make it work. So I got friends and family capital, didn't waste my time when I didn't get return phone calls from VCs or private equity. And then had a tiny bit of cash, enough to make the product, enough to launch it into Fred Siegel, Ron Robinson's Apothea at Fred Siegel.
God, I love that place.
That was the best. He was my very first yes. I always give him credit. He was my first yes in this journey. And then, you know, back in those days, nobody believed LA to be a beauty hub. So you had to have a New York retailer. So I launched at Jeffrey New York.
By the way, also the best. Like, that's a thing.
Those are two of the absolute.
If it wasn't at Jeffrey's, it didn't exist.
Right. Like, best store ever. Best. I miss it so much. But, you know, and then, you know, I couldn't afford a staff. I was shipping and receiving customer service. I gave, you know, some equity in the company to our friend Troy Nankin so he could do the PR because I couldn't afford a publicist, and he loved beauty as much as I did. And so partnered with him and really just sort of learned how to be an entrepreneur by teaching myself and asking a lot of questions and making a ton of mistakes.
And had many mistakes. How many times do you get asked, do you ever make mistakes? Have you made any mistakes? I'm like hundreds.
If you're not making mistakes, you're not actually paying attention if you're not making mistakes or honoring those mistakes, because they always lead you to a better lesson. And so I had a lot of stops and starts. Most of my stops had to do with the business getting to this level, but I didn't have the capital to take it to that level. And so I would, I mean, that business relaunch, I mean, I don't, can't even remember how many relaunch parties I had for Nikkeo. It was like just this running ongoing, but like the resilience of like, okay, well, I'm going to go away for a little while, try to find some money, you know, help my friend start a t-shirt brand or help this one start a candle brand, help this one get stores, and then I'm back.
Do you ever feel like you're in the ocean, right? Like, do you ever feel like you're in the ocean swimming out and then like the wave comes and you fall backwards and then you swim.
Yeah.
And then the wave comes and you go backwards.
Yes. That is called entrepreneurship.
100%.
It's wild. And so, yeah, there were gut wrenching moments. You know, I always tell people I used to have a real trigger to the word failure, because when our kids learned to ride bikes and they'd fall, we didn't look at them as failures. The only failure was not getting back up and trying again.
It's true.
And so I had a lot of get back up moments in that journey. And then, you know, got to be in amazing portfolios. At one point I was part of the Gerwich portfolio, which founded Laura Mercier. Yep. And I got to learn so much being a part of this big portfolio. And then they sold, and this happens a lot, especially in beauty. You have a brand and then the big company sells and then you have to move on. And so I did that a couple of times.
And hold on, were you having kids at this point? Were you like also having children during this, right?
Yes, yes. Baby number one came in 2006. I shut the business down in 2008. Baby number two came in 2010, had to find new investors in 2014. I mean, it was quite, and I'm married to an artist, right? So it was, you know, very much a, you know, yes, we do arts and crafts for a living, but you feel it sometimes. And so,
it's crazy.
You know,
it's crazy.
But in it all, like, I look back at the mistakes. I look at the times I didn't trust my gut. I took bad deals. Yep. I got in business with people I had no business getting in business with.
Same.
And I knew
Same.
It. And I knew
Same.
It. But I did.
Same.
I did it out of desperation.
Well, you're desperate.
I did it because,
yeah.
And so those lessons were big lessons learned. But it was really in 2020 that I found that my passion and my purpose aligned, which is I had been doing this Nikkeo Beauty dance for 18 years at that point.
The brand had now sold.
Yeah, had sold to Unilever in 2017. You know, it was still considered niche and boutique, even though it was a Unilever brand. And it, after the murder of George Floyd, when I tell you, in my 18-year beauty career, had never received more press, more attention, more sales. And at this point, I didn't even own the company. I just worked there.
Oh my God.
DMs flying at me. And at that point, truth be told, I wasn't thinking about beauty. We were in the middle of a global pandemic.
I mean, what were we thinking about at that point? Surviving.
Right.
Surviving, right?
Surviving.
Like literally like staying alive.
Yeah. Literally. My husband had almost died of COVID, but he got in March of 2020 where nobody really knew what was happening. I am Black.
Yep.
I have two biracial children. Mm-hmm. I was not caring about beauty sales at that moment, but I couldn't believe how many lists, top Black owned, Black shop, follow, et cetera, list that I was on, And so rather than just be pissed about it all, yeah. I started shopping the list.
Right.
That's how I decided to take my pain and turn it into purpose. Yep. Let me just start buying some of these brands. First of all, I was shocked because as someone who had been in premium skincare for 18 years, I'd always thought I was the only, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm on a list of 500 brands, 100 brands, 1,000 brands that I've never heard of.
Get out of here.
Had very little distribution. When I went to their Instagrams and started going down a rabbit hole, I couldn't believe how many of them didn't have very many followers, started reading their stories, incredible humans. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. How is it that I never knew they existed? And if I didn't know,
no one
as
knew.
A Black female founder in
beauty,
a lot of people didn't know.
Sure.
Right. And so that's when, you know, Patrick and I, one of my dear friends and co-founder of 13 Loon, we'd been talking about starting something together. We didn't know if we wanted to do fashion. We didn't know if we wanted to do beauty. He had always wanted to do something in beauty. I'd always wanted to do something in fashion. And then it was just this moment of, you know, I'm going to go create the retailer I always wished I had.
Wow.
And I know what it's like to be them. And I know how hard it is to win at shelf. But I've had the opportunities that they may never see if we don't start something like this. And so that's how 13 Loon was born, to be the first of its kind, truly inclusive beauty retail platform. And, you know, there were beautiful initiatives happening like the 15% pledge and pull up for change, all of this happening in 2020 and permission for Black and Brown people to stand up and not have to ask for permission for equality and justice. Yeah. But it was also very confusing to me that I'm on a list of 500 brands. How's it so hard to get to 13 on shelf?
Isn't that bizarre?
I guess we'll do it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's so brilliant. And it's also, I think, just given your history and experience, it's like, you know, I mean, I know personally, obviously, because I know and love you, but like, I know anything that's going on 13 Loon is going to be amazing. Right. So,
Because
one would say, okay, why would I go here versus Ulta or Sephora or wherever, right? And I think because you, obviously, like, I'm biased in saying this, but like, you know, right? So I'm saying that, but I think for my listeners and our listeners, it's sort of like, this is the destination to go for.
It offers discovery. It's like early days Sephora. You know, I remember when Sephora, you know, first came to the US and I would walk through there and discover brands I'd never heard of before, right? And so, yes, 90% of our brands are, you know, created by people of color who make products for everyone because we also needed to debunk the myth that Black and Brown people only make products for ourselves. But 10%
that's ridiculous, first of all.
It's so
that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Sorry.
And by the way, like, your products have African ingredients in them.
Right.
Like whether they're made by a Black or Brown person, for sure there's stuff in your cabinet that comes from Africa.
I mean,
or South America or Southeast Asia. So, you know, we really, it was sad to me how many people in support of me in 2020 would send me DMs when I was still working with the Nikeo brand. Yep. And they would say, I really want to buy your face oil, but I don't look like you. Will it work on my skin?
My response to that would be like, I hope if I use this oil, my skin will turn into your skin. Like, what are you talking about?
It's face oil. And by the way, everybody has melanin. That's the other teaching moment that I have to do from time to time is when some people get, you say melanin rich or melanin period, and people just assume you're talking about, I'm like, no. Every single person in the world has melanin in their skin. Some have more, some have less. That's just
I only laugh because I'm just like, oh my God, does this actually still?
Yes, it's still a thing.
Wow. Entrepreneurs know climbing to the top starts at the beginning. At Genesis, they're all about beginning. It's right there in the name because the beginning is where the action is. Sure, things are up in the air in the beginning, but that's what makes them thrilling. Genesis has harnessed all that excitement into their performance SUV, the GV70. Turn heads with stunning design inside and out. The GV70 features the silhouette of a coupe and the capability of an SUV. Discover intuitive technology inside the GV70 with a 14.5-inch infotainment system, fingerprint recognition, and available Lexicon premium audio. Enjoy an exhilarating drive in the GV70 featuring standard all-wheel drive and available electronically controlled suspension, plus exceptional handling and agility. I used to dread driving around LA because of the traffic, the stop and go, the blaring sun, always getting directly into my eyes, no matter what time of day it is. But thanks to Genesis and their GV70, driving around here isn't too bad, especially when I'm driving in style. Every Genesis is a reminder to try something new, to keep growing, keep hustling, keep beginning. What will you begin? Learn more at genesis.com. Genesis, keep beginning.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But yeah, so, you know, and 10% of our brands are obviously dedicated to fostering allyships because we really wanted to honor brands that long before 2020, brands like We Carry, Goop, Olaplex, yeah, Hourglass, yeah, brands that long before, sure, 2020 cared about all in their formulations, really exhibited inclusion and diversity in their companies. Yeah. And so we have our ally brands as well. But, you know, I think
it has to be that way, though, because then it's sort of, yeah, like, it's sort of like, it's almost like to draw a line in the sand and say, this, right, is only Black and Brown owned, yeah, right? It's sort of like, okay, but wait, no,
that's not inclusion. No. Yeah, right? That's not inclusion. And if we say we're going to be the first of its kind, totally inclusive,
yes,
beauty platform, yep, and store, then we have to be totally inclusive. And by the way, allyship has been a big part of my life and my journey in beauty. And many of our ally brands are founders who helped me,
sure,
when I was an independent founder trying to survive at shelf. And so, you know, we also have big brands that are BIPOC owned, like Pattern, yep, and yep, Pharrell's Human Race. Yep. And, you know, and so it's great because what ultimately happens is that we have created a family of brands, yep, and we really operate as a family where we all support one another. Yep. And yes, the products are incredible. We have the greatest VP of merchandising. She came from Net-a-Porter. Yep. She helped build beauty at Net-a-Porter under David Olson. Mass. Her name's Janelle Freeman, also a Black, yep, woman. So really,
I met her. I met her, actually.
Yeah, she's great. She's the best.
I was so jealous of her name, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wait, was that your birth name? And she was like, yes. I'm like, ah.
She's the best. So yeah, it's been this journey of, you know, we started with 13 Black-owned brands in December of 2020. We now have over 170 brands.
How amazing is that?
Just opened or in about to complete opening 600 store and stores in JCPenney, opening a flagship store. So it is just, I think the proof is in the pudding, yep, and that people want to make their shopping more meaningful. Yep. And I think that's really what we attribute the success that we've had thus far to, the fact that people just want to do good and buy great beauty products.
Well, let me ask you a question. So, okay, so you've clearly had, there's been a lot of bumps in the road. You've, mm-hmm, like started and stopped a million times, you whatever. Was there, did you find any of the, because I know for me, and I talk about it very openly, I have always had a lot of females that were not nice to me, that were very awful and very, just threw up every obstacle they ever could for me to fail. And, yeah, so, and I think now, you know, I think that's probably why I'm so supportive of women, because I do, yeah, know how much that means. And I do have, yeah, incredibly supportive women in my life. And I think, you know, when you know the difference, it kind of matters more. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, you know, you've obviously had your own set of obstacles, but I mean, did you ever have to deal with that pettiness, the copycat, the jealousy? Yeah. Did you deal with that? And like, on the flip, yeah, side of that, right? And then, yeah, and then on the flip side of that,
yeah,
is there one person that you're like, this person changed my life? This person, yeah, like, so, yeah, okay, so did you, yeah, did have haters, you did have copycats.
Yeah.
Or do.
You know, it's interesting.
Or do.
It's interesting because, you know, I've always been like, it sounds cliche, just a girl's girl. Yeah. Like, I love, yep, females. I have the most incredible group of women in my life. I've been God is circling since, you know, I was in my 20s with this group of women. And, you know, it's just something that I really prioritize are my female friendships. Half my, you know, my best friend Shannon moved here.
Love
from
Shannon.
Oklahoma because I had no friends. And, you know, like,
wait, Shannon's from Oklahoma?
Yes, Shannon Get and I. I mean, Shannon, she was at 17.
Oh my God. I don't know why I thought she was from Texas.
Yes. We were sorority sisters. We were Kappas together.
Oh my God.
I rushed her.
Wow.
But yes. Yeah. So Shannon's my sister. We used to, when she first moved here, we lived in an apartment with two other people, but it was a two bedroom and we slept on twin mattresses
oh my God.
Next to each other in the smaller bedroom.
So this is our dear friend Shannon Rottenberg, who is also like a badass female. She's freaking amazing.
And like a true woman who supports women. But what's interesting is in my journey, I've always felt so supported by women. And if I had haters, I had no idea. In the last 2 years of my life, and I'm about to turn 50, I have experienced it. I was crying to my husband about it last night. Like,
wow.
A mean girl situation. And it's so interesting because I get very triggered by, you know, and this is like a very supportive husband thing to say is, well, don't worry about it. She's just jealous of you.
That's what Roger
does she have
says.
To be,
it doesn't
what,
help,
what
though.
What does she have to be jealous of? I have worked my ass off for 21 years. I am dedicated to changing lives of other people. Like,
doesn't matter.
There's literally room for all of us. I don't believe that there's anything anybody would have to be jealous of me. So it doesn't resonate with me. But I will say, I believe that in success,
yes,
that's when the haters are going to come.
That's true.
And I never had experienced that before because I was always trying to get to a level. Yes,
sure.
I had success with Nikkeia, but I was always in the grind, always in the struggle. Even in the high moments, it was still just trying to get to the higher place, et cetera. I'm still on that journey, you know, trying to help others build generational wealth, trying to build my own generational wealth. But I will tell you, whether it's that I'm being seen more because I need to be seen in order to support the mission, whatever it is, I've had a few breakups with girlfriends. And it's really freaking painful.
It's real painful. And I think you're 100% right. And it is an absolute takeaway. And I'll be honest with you, I've been dealing with it. I mean, look. In reality, and I've talked about this, I've been dealing with it since I was in kindergarten, however, which is insane. But in my business life, probably when I was about, probably since my first job, and don't forget, I'm in fashion. So you know, you kind of sign up for that, but like, but I will say that from probably 25, from when the first write-up was done about me and my career, I've been like just tears and that, you know, like I have been brought to tears on so many occasions and with, you know, and it's not like I want to play victim. It's not at all that. It's just more like why, right? And I think we just wonder that. And I think you just made such an interesting point that I never really heard it so sort of like in success. It's sort of like there's this. There isn't jealousy when people are like, oh, she's really having a hard time. This is really hard for her. Mm-hmm. She's really getting knocked down. It's like all of a sudden, for some delusional reason, I think they think that it's easy or like for some reason you're getting lucky. And I think that for whatever reason, you know, I taught my kids at a very young age when they were old enough to understand. And I will never forget because I was driving with my boys in the back seat. And my little one said, Mommy, what's jealousy? And he had a lisp and it came off like he's like, what's jealousy? It's like, and I, you know what I said? I said, it's the meanest, worst emotion that you'll ever feel. And he said, why? Like hate? And I said, yes, but it's even worse because jealousy is this trick emotion where it's like a trigger, right? And it makes you think bad things. It makes you do bad things. It makes you think things or do things that you'll regret. And it's very often out of jealousy and it really makes you do bad things. And I think sometimes people use it like, and I'm very mindful even now when I say to somebody, oh my God, I'm so jealous of your skin. I don't even want to use the word jealous in that moment. Yeah, I want to use the word I'm envious of your skin, right?
Right, right.
And I think you're right. And I think that now you're really having this moment. And to me, it's funny because it's like all of us, to the outside, I've always thought of you as this huge success, right? But like you have three kids, and I want to talk about that because I just had Anina Bing on the pod last week, and
I love her so
she's
much.
Great. I've known her for so long, and I think
and that sweet Bianca.
I can't. I secretly hope Skylar and Bianca get married one day. But
I mean, we love Bianca
the best.
Both her babies.
They're the best. Mm-hmm. Benjamin's amazing. They're amazing, and so I think you know it's interesting because. While she was building her company, and similar to you, I think the thing that I like to talk about, because I had my children later, I still work my freaking ass off, but it's different because I always say, when you're having children and building your career, I believe there's no harder challenge there, because those first 10 years of your children's life, and let alone... You have three, don't you have three? You have two. I don't know why I thought you had a third along the lines, but two. So
two and two dogs.
So so you have four.
Yes.
But I that to me is the ultimate hardship in this because having your baby business and growing that and all the things, and then having your babies who need you so bad, they're their most needy. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like. To me, it's sort of like that is the challenge. And so I always say like, okay, and I say this to Roger all the time, like what would it have been if I was doing, if I was having the kids while I was building my career? And I always think like, I think one of them would have greatly suffered and clearly yours have not. But I do want to just really commend you for that because I think with all of these, like you had to have your boxing gloves on. You had to have your tissues by for, you know, constantly, I'm sure, crying at night when no one was looking. But like,
No, definitely. I mean, you know, but it's interesting because, yes, I had a brand before I had a baby, you know, I had a brand before I had a husband. Yeah. So,
which is another baby, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, he was there. He was my boyfriend. He helped me pack boxes and helped me load the car.
As
and
they
all
do.
Those types of
as
things.
They do.
He was definitely a hands-on boyfriend
the best.
And then stayed around and became my husband and father of my children. But he, you know, I do think there was something pretty phenomenal, especially when I had Lulu, my oldest child, who's turning 17 week. It's crazy.
That's
now,
mental.
Like, we just went through the seventh grade hustle to get Rocco into school all day, 9 to 5, head straight to a dinner when I'm a mom.
Yep.
So even though it was really tough to be a startup and be a mom with a newborn, there was something really special about the fact that that kid came to work with me every day because work was at home. And, you know,
same.
I would say the greater challenge has probably been, you know, and then when I had Rocco, I was going through so many transitions and business and partners and whatever that, you know, it was, they're 5 years apart.
Yep.
So I had this, you know, built-in sweet big sister helper, but it was a really traumatic time for me on so many levels professionally that I sometimes felt like he sort of got robbed that first year because I was trying to figure out what my next steps were going to be. And now, you know, it's interesting. I said this, I was on a panel the other day and someone said to me, what triggers you? And I said, you know what triggers me when, and it, sadly, it happens a lot from other women. Oh my God, is it so hard for David that you travel so much with the kids? Gosh, it seems like you're just all over the place. Like you're everywhere. You're out. That is my job, right? And nobody's ever asked my husband when he went on a business trip.
No one, nor will they.
If it's hard for me,
nor
when he's gone.
Will they.
Ever. And so that's one thing that triggers me.
Wow.
But,
no,
you know,
but I that's a really
I
valid point.
I think it
point.
Is that, mom guilt is real.
It's
anybody
so
says they
real.
Don't have it, it's a
it's
lie.
It's so real.
It's real. But I will say now that I have a 17-year-old daughter that's, you know, starting to look at colleges.
She's independent.
She's so freaking independent, so proud, wants to start her own beauty brand. Yep. So we did something.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
And my mom worked her ass off. And I turned out just fine. So
I think you're right. And I think, look, I think it's harder on us when they're babies, to be honest. I think it's harder on us because truth be told, it's so funny. I didn't leave Skylar till he was like four. I just took him everywhere. Yeah. I literally just took him everywhere. Yeah. And then, and Caius, I left much younger because I was like, he doesn't even freaking remember it, literally. Like, and it's funny because I remember I the first time I left them both, they were like 4 and 1. And I went to Australia and I cried the entire flight.
So hard.
I cried the entire flight. Roger was like, at some point, you have to stop crying. This is so embarrassing. And I was like, and now the other day, it's funny. I literally said to the kids, do you remember that time I went to Australia when da da da? And they're like, no.
No.
I'm like, no, Mom. And that was a real aha moment for me because what I realized is it's us. And so I think that ultimately it formed them. And I think that really great kids with great work ethics come from parents that work their ass off because it's all they know. And they know that they need to work for what they want in life, you know?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And I do think it's quite a gift. I mean, listen, being a stay-at-home mom, I can't imagine a harder job.
No,
but
it's
I
true,
do think that there is value.
Yes, in, agreed.
And it also, I think what it does too, is it helps you to really, truly prioritize your time.
100%.
Right? And you know, even last night when I was crying about someone hurting my feelings, a former friend.
Doesn't it just take your stomach out?
Yeah, totally. And then my husband at one point, and then I just stopped crying and I thought, well, this is just silly. Like, I'm hanging out with you, having a glass of wine. Like, I haven't seen you all day. Yeah. Like, I don't want to spend my time crying about her. I want to ask you about your day, right? It's that constant prioritization of your moments that I think that you get the privilege to figure out. That and self-care, because without the self-care, all the wheels fall.
I got to get better at that because my wheels are falling. No, I'm just kidding. I'm like, my wheels are falling off. I got to get better at that.
I just take a nap every day.
Do you?
If I can just get an every day.
I haven't napped since I was pregnant, but I'm also just not a great sleeper to begin with. So I think that's beautiful.
No, you have to practice. It is. I was a terrible nap. My mom said I was the worst napper as a kid. I hated taking naps. Growing up, I never valued a nap. Once I had kids and I wasn't even that mom that's like sleep when the baby sleeps. Like I would just get shit done when the baby was sleeping. And one day I just was so exhausted, like with life and
two
kids.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the middle of the day. It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to bed.
So wait, is it like a disco nap, like a 30 minute or is it like a 2 hour?
I set my clock for 37 minutes because it takes me about 7 minutes to fall asleep, 7 to 9 minutes. So I kind of meditate in bed. And then at the end of the meditation, I sort of drift off. You go into this like, no, like your phone has to be away. So you're forced to get up when it rings. And then you kind of go into this really deep sleep. And at about the 25th, 26th minute, you know, is when the alarm actually gets to the 37th minute. And you feel like a new person.
Get out of here. Okay, this is brilliant.
And you have to practice it. It's hard. And then once you start doing it, then you crave it. I schedule it.
Babe, it would take me 37 minutes to wrap my head around going to sleep. So like, I can't even, you know, so my team literally thinks I'm a lunatic. Like I literally will text them about something so freaking random at like 2 a.m. And then at like 5, I suck. I have to really take this away from today.
Yeah.
The 37 minute midday disco nap. I'm obsessed.
Midday disco nap.
I'm obsessed.
And it doesn't even have to be midday. It could
like
be
whatever.
Like, yo, I had an 8 a.m. Zoom and a 9 a.m. Zoom, but I don't have anything else till noon. I'm going to do it at 10:30 today.
Wow.
Like a baby.
But I also
have the gift of sleeping anywhere. Like I'm the person that falls asleep on a plane before they take off. I sleep in cars.
I hate you now. That's okay. No. So that is a gift. I want you to recognize that as an actual gift because
it is. There's no way I could do all I do if I didn't sleep as much as
I do. That's beautiful.
Like, there's no way.
Well, I love you so much. I'm very excited.
I love you too.
I am really genuinely I'm such a fan, and I love you obviously as a person, and I've just gotten to know you so much more over the last several years, and like, I'll never forget our kids playing at Soho House when they were little, and they were so cute, and I hope they reconnect again, but I love watching what you're doing. I also get very inspired by you every time we speak, and you know, I also love your journey, and I love that it wasn't easy, and I love that you've done it all yourself. I love that you have, you know, when I say yourself, what I mean by that is that you've had to be your own champion to keep going, because you could have quit a thousand times.
100%.
But I'm very excited for what's to come for 13 Loon and thank for Relevant you. And all of it. So
thank you.
I love you madly.
Oh my gosh. Love you madly, and thank you for being there for the last 21 years. You are truly, truly the best.
And I will always be. And I will always be. So let's keep doing it.
Yes, let's do it together.
Please tell me what things I have to slather all over my face to look more like you when I get off the phone.
You're so sweet. Just take a nap, Rachel.
Right, sure. That's going to be it. All right, my sweet. Have a beautiful day. Go take your disco nap.
You too. Thank you. Bye, honey. Bye.
It's the time in the show when I answer two listener questions. So let's see what we have today. If you were to wear one dress from the Oscars, which ones would you choose and why? I would have to say, hands down, no questions asked, Cara Delevingne's red Elisabe couture was absolute perfection from top to bottom. I would wear it. I love everything about it. I love that it was this very subtle kind of sexy moment. I loved how Grace Kelly she looked. I loved the jewelry. I literally looked at that and said, if there was one look at the Oscars that I would have styled exactly the same way without tweaking a thing, it would have been on Cara Delevingne's. Okay, do you get eyelash extensions? That's really funny. So the answer is I do not, and I have not in 10 years. I did used to get them when they first came out because I thought it was like a dream come true that I could have like Bardot lashes permanently. And then I quickly stopped doing them for a few reasons. One, because they broke my actual real eyelashes off. And two, because I found them to be very high maintenance. And as someone who gets their makeup done a lot for shoots and things like that, I found that the makeup artist really struggled with them. And then I really struggled when I was traveling and I would lose some and some would come out and then I couldn't get them replaced. And it was such a thing. I do not. I put on individual lashes myself, and it's very easy, and I just do my own. So, and I like being able to take them on and off. So that's what I do. Don't forget to submit your questions for next week's episode. All you have to do is DM us your questions to @climbinginheelspod on Instagram, and I might just answer your question. Thank you so much to Nikeo for coming on the podcast today and opening up about her life, career, and her goals. Nikeo is truly one of the most thoughtful and passionate people I know, and I can't wait to see what else comes her way. And I have to say, of all the episodes we've done thus far, this one has really the most takeaways in terms of all of you out there trying to build a brand, trying to make a career pivot, trying to, you know, sort of get over your fears of trying to really live out your dreams, no matter how unrealistic they may seem. I think Nikeo has clearly had hurdles to jump over. And you know, she's here. She's smiling. She's excited. She's more passionate than ever. She's still going, stronger than ever. And, you know, really doing what she believes in. And, you know, I'm certainly a fan. I get very inspired every time I speak to her, whether just, you know, hanging out at a party or, you know, actually interviewing her like today. I learned so much and I hope you did too. And I really think you're going to love this episode. And don't forget to check out 13 Loon because it's pretty epic. And if you want more Climbing in Heels content, follow me on @RachelZoe. and at Climbing in Heels Pod on Instagram for more updates on upcoming guests, episodes, and all things Curator. I will see you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.